Okay, we'll call the Senate Transportation Committee to order. For the record, it is 1:32 today, Tuesday, March 2nd. Present today, we've got Senator Keel, Senator Machicki, Vice Chair Schauer, and myself, Senator Myers. We have a quorum to conduct business. Staff and committee, we have Nancy Hemingway from Senate Records and Nate Williams as our moderator, Michaela Anderson, my committee aide. Quick reminder, please, everybody, silence your cell phones for the duration. So, today it's the big one. We are starting off on hearing Senate Bill 74, the GO bonds for the infrastructure projects. We'd like to welcome Director Neil Steiniger from the Office of Management and Budget to the table to present the bill. We also have quite a few people online in case Mr. Steiniger needs a little backup on any of these projects. The intention is I want to leave the finance side of things to the finance committee, but I do want to be able to address any questions we have on any of the projects themselves. So with that, Mr. Steiniger, feel free to take it away.
Thank you. For the record, Neil Steiniger, Director, Office of Management and Budget. So just to start, just really briefly to talk a little bit about general obligation bonds and why we're choosing to put forward a general obligation bond package. As Chair Meyer said, primarily we're here to talk about details about the projects, but I think this is a little bit of helpful context. So the proposed overall bond issuance that we're looking at is $354.6 million in projects. There's also $1.8 million, which is the cost of actually issuing those bonds, of the work that goes into issuing and selling bonds by the Department of Revenue. And with that issuance, once all of those bonds are issued, we'll have about $22.8 million in annual debt service that will go into the state's operating budget. Currently, bond interest rates are historically low at below 2%, and the state in its savings accounts makes a projected about 6.25% annually. So really, that's the reason why bonds are advantageous right now. So if you look at the graph on the top right, what we're trying to show there is, roughly the balance of the CBR. Should we have just spent this money out of the CBR, about $350 million. If you took that out day one, that's the blue line of, what you would have with earnings going forward from a starting billion-dollar balance. The orange line reflects, the savings that you would have if you finance. So basically, it's just to show that you're earning that higher interest rate on the money in the account going forward. And so there is a net positive outcome to state savings based on bonding. So financing this can result in about $273 million in additional interest earnings, as opposed to the status quo of just spending the money up front. So a little bit about implementation of the bond package. It does require a vote of the people. It needs to go on a statewide ballot. That would be through a special election. The Division of Elections thinks that that would be about 120 days out from passage and signing of a GO bond bill. There is a cost associated with that of about $2 million that it would cost to actually, print ballots, notify individuals, and actually hold that special election. So there is a bit of a cost there in getting that consent of the people for these projects. So before I move to the projects themselves and the department listings, is there any questions?
Senator Machicki?
The $400 million delta in 47 on that graph, is that net-net, including the cost of the debt and as a differential to the earnings that at 6.25%?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, yes. So the blue line is reflecting if you just pay for the projects. So just as $354.6 million, the orange line includes all those other costs, okay. Things like the the debt service and so on.
Thank you.
Senator Schauer?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I'm going to ask the question with CARES Act funding coming this way. It's just something more for the context, I think, Director, on this is that, so I understand there's like $850 million headed our way, plus or minus, whatever, but something's coming this way to the state, right? So is it something that the administration has looked at as opposed to having to bond? And I see pros and cons. There are, depending on your philosophy. But so asking the why not question, why not consider, instead of putting it on the credit card, kind of, just using the fiat money that's coming our way that's not backed up by anything anymore anyways in the federal government before, you know, at our debt levels, and turning that fiat money into concrete and steel now? Is that something that you guys have talked about, thought about, as opposed to putting us on a long-term trajectory for another bond-type issue?
Through the chair, Senator Schauer, that's a really good question. The $850 million you referenced, that's what's in the portion for the State of Alaska that's in that current House bill, federal House bill, that is still under consideration by the federal Senate. While it is looking likely that that's the same calculation that will come out, it's unknown at this point. When we put this together, really, we didn't have that information. When that money comes into the state, you know, how it gets used will be, you know, a very important discussion, and whether that goes to, you know, capital infrastructure type investment, backfilling of state revenues that we've lost via COVID. But kind of regardless of that, it doesn't really change the calculation of benefit to using bonding in the current interest rate environment. You know, the question of incurring debt for the long term is, you know, very important policy decision that, you know, is made both with, you know, this body and the executive branch. You know, we feel that delta between current interest rates and the earnings on state savings, regardless of what money comes in from the federal government, whether it be through this new federal relief package or through existing packages that support things like highway funding and DOT, that even with those coming in, it's still advantageous to look at and consider using debt right now for capital infrastructure.
Yeah, go ahead, Senator Schauer.
Just to follow up to that briefly, again, philosophical differences aside on, you know, bonding for stuff versus paying for it if you can. What about, and again, this is just a what if you guys have talked about it, have you discussed the possibility of reducing how much we might borrow, in essence, to pay for that and use some of the CARES Act to offset it some? It sounds like maybe that hasn't been discussed, but I'm just curious if you guys have thought about that as an alternative to putting so much on the bond as opposed to a smaller amount using, again, that federal money.
And through the chair, Senator Schauer, there's certainly some of these projects in the bond package list that we put together that, you know, subsequent to that, with some of this money that came in through CERSA in December, could be eligible for some of those FHWA dollars. And so some of those projects, you know, may be able to find a funding source outside of bonding. You know, so there are good projects on this list that maybe that CARES Act money coming in may be a better way to fund them. But, you know, the use of bonding and a lot of the other projects aren't eligible. So a lot of the other projects aren't eligible for current CARES Act or CERSA Act funding that we have, and so bonding is really the more appropriate.
Thank you.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Going both to the chart and maybe a little piece of various funding streams, the lion's share of the proposal is to federal highway projects, but in essence, it's 2 years of federal highway match, right, borrowed up front and spread over what would have been 2 years of capital budgets. If I'm understanding correctly, there's not, when we look at the federal money, match money, there's not an additional source of federal match money. We're not actually accelerating the inflow of federal funding with this. We're just replacing our annual match obligation with bond proceeds, right?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, that's a very good point and really gets to the heart of some of the questions that we had in determining the list of projects that we put forward and sort of the philosophy by which we determine the project list. So we looked at one of those factors being certainty going forward for industries like construction in the state, being able to set the agenda for what we'll use that federal highway money for in the next 2 years gives some certainty to that industry when they're making hiring decisions. So we felt like that was one of those factors that we were balancing between, you know, that and immediacy of need for projects that could get on the street, you know, as soon as this bond package is issued, and as soon as bonds are sold, as well as geographic distribution and, you know, just overall need and existing lists that departments have put forward of capital needs throughout the state. But that future obligation of federal highway money, that was one of the kind of key areas we were looking at to create that certainty forward. It does commit future STIP awards, so it is sort of a replacement of general fund in future capital budgets. But so there is sort of an impact there in future budgets. There's a little less general fund need that we'll have to obligate in those 2 years.
So, Mr. Chairman, not to do the finance work at the transportation table, as you said, but it is an interesting thing to look at, that for a lot of those, it's not really additional projects, right? It's projects we were going to do anyway. We were going to fund them over 2 years with general funds for our state match, and the proposal is to borrow our state match.
Fair enough. Just for the record, note that Senator Bishop has joined us. Mr. Steiniger, question for myself. Mentioned the special election that we're looking at. So approximately 4 months after we adjourn here, assume that we adjourn somewhere in April or May, we're looking at a special election in July or August. So I'm assuming that this means then that we're looking at most of these projects will be done summer of 2022, excuse me.
Chair Myers, the timing in terms of when the bonds can be issued and sold does depend upon when the bill is passed and when that vote can get to the people. Some of these projects can be started, you know, as soon as that money is available and as soon as that's approved by the people. The timeline of issuance, I think, would be a question probably for Department of Revenue in terms of when exactly that money can be available. But there are projects on this list that don't necessarily require that summer season to start work, or you can start to work with the contractors to get them online, and that gives them that, you know, certainty of income in the future to start making those hiring decisions and, you know, getting that certainty into the economy to know that this work is coming. So there's still a benefit even if the project doesn't start till the following summer.
Senator Char.
One last follow-up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm asking you just to switch hats for a moment, and I know your job is to sell it. I got that when you come here before the legislature as the appropriating body. But if you were to switch hats from our position, you know, nothing's for free, and there's often, you know, unintended consequences or things that come out of that. So for one second, if you would be willing to, can you also, for the record, you know, there's the positives, the pros, but what are some gotchas and downfalls that we need to consider, because there always are. So I would appreciate if you could just illuminate during the discussions the things that, you know, might be not as positive when we do bonding, just so that it's there. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Oh, Senator Michiki.
Thank you, sir. So a statement was made, and I'm not countering that statement, about these are projects that we would do with general fund dollars later, but a pretty large proportion of these are not matchable projects. Could you?
Mm-hmm. Sorry, he just didn't answer my question.
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I was waiting for.
I can wait.
I'm sorry, through the chair, Senator Schauer. I thought that was more of a rhetorical note for my future comments and not a specific question. I'll try to highlight areas where there are, considerations. You know, and one just on this slide, you know, one consideration is, you know, while we think it's worth it, there is, you know, you are paying interest on this. You know, you're not just paying the $354 million. You're paying that plus the interest payments over time. You know, while we think there's that kind of the opportunity cost benefit of the earnings we make on that money, you know, but there is interest payments on this. So that's something that has to be considered. You're paying more than $354 million to get $354 million in projects. But over time, you know, we do think it pencils out to be a net benefit to our financial position. But that is one of those areas where, yes, there's a consideration to be made and weighed in this policy decision. And I'll try and highlight those as I go through more of this.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Michiki.
So a large proportion of these are not federal matchable projects. It'd be nice to see those broken out. So it's part of a previous statement is true and it partially is not. When we talk about a federal match aspect, and the other value possibly would be, it'd be nice to understand the stimulus value of expediting some of these projects. I mean, we're in a recovery from COVID. It'd be nice to know how many of these are private versus public sector projects and understand how many Alaskans we're actually putting to work that are not for the projects that are biddable to the private sector. So when I think about it, the stimulus value that under 2% interest rate right now to expedite some of these has other intrinsic value as well. Is that a part of the consideration of this package?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, on your first statement, you are very correct. Not all of these leverage federal funds. Primarily, it's only really the DOT highway STIP replacement projects. So most of these are, you know, cover responding only. In terms of weighing the stimulus effect of some of the projects, I think as we go through the project list, one of the things I'd ask these lifelines that I have that can talk about the specific projects to touch on is, you know, whether they'll contract out the work or whether it's work that gets done in-house. For the most part, these would be, you know, work that would be contracted out, you know, whether it's, you know, a maintenance project where some of that work is going to be done by a state maintenance person where they're, you know, purchasing the materials through the bonding, but a lot of it would be contracted out to other vendors. DOT can really speak to how they make those, you know, contracting versus doing in-house decisions. These are tend to be much larger projects where they would trend towards contracting out rather than working in-house.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Anything else? All right, on to the next slide then.
All right, so this slide is really ties to the spreadsheet that you should have in your packets that lays out every project. This is gives you a summary of the departments that these projects are going to. This geobond package touches on probably more projects or more departments than other geobond packages in the past have, because as we were building this, what we looked at and kind of the seed information as we selected projects was to look at prior capital project requests that couldn't be satisfied for departments, whether they be through listings of major maintenance or deferred maintenance for state facilities or facilities that the state traditionally has you know, helped support, such as schools, or the, you know, STIP, the surface transportation list, or other kind of legacy capital projects that departments have been asking for many years that really have not had the room in the small capital budgets that we've, you know, been putting forward over the last several years. So as a result, it touches on more departments than other prior bond packages have. And you can see that distribution here, as was alluded to by Senator Keel, a very large portion of it is going to Department of Transportation through both the surface transportation projects as well as some aviation projects. And there's a list of the airports in your package that the department will be able to go into as well.
Okay. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Steininger, I'm looking at the list of folks you have online. I don't see law, so maybe you could speak to us about the single subject rule, since the courts have said in the past that capital project is not a single subject.
Through the chair, Senator Keel, when we discussed this with the Department of Law, we were able to find other situations of, you know, similar bills that touch on different projects and had kind of this wider scope like this. We think this is allowable under the single subject rule, the single subject being, you know, bonding for capital. You're right that prior bond proposals have often been split into multiple proposals, but we don't see a true legal issue with the single subject rule on this proposal.
Mr. Chairman, just
follow up.
Well, I may want to provide the committee with alleged legal opinion that says otherwise.
Fair enough. We'll cross that bridge when we come to it. Well, we got a short slide deck today. I think probably what we want to do is, at least in my mind, is simply to go through our list of projects that we've been provided and see what sort of questions we may or may not have on each of them for Mr. Steiniger. So I think we'll just start at the beginning here. So we've got starting off with the West Susitna Road access coming through DCCED by way of Ada, or the other way around. I'll start off with that one. I'm just curious about the rationale behind that one. Ada is set up to bond on its own. Why are we bonding for Ada?
That's a great question, and I know that Alan Weitzner is on the line from Ada. They do have the availability to bond on their own, but there are some times when it's appropriate to support a project in this manner, and I think Alan can speak to that pretty well if we don't mind calling on him.
All right. Mr. Weitzner, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Thank you, Chairman. And thank you very much, Mr. Steiniger, for the asking the question over 4-8 and being able to address it. What I would like to identify is the fact that the $8.5 million has been...
If you could just identify yourself for the record quickly, please.
This is Alan Weisner. I'm the executive director of ADA.
Okay, thank you.
The $8.5 million that's been defined for appropriation to the West Susitna Access Project is to support some of the early stage environmental and cultural resource activities that are needed to ultimately get to a NEPA or the early stage environmental applications that we need to do for the road project itself in filing a what would be an environmental impact statement for the road's development. The reason that the appropriation is necessary is that it's in line with what we've done with the Long Mountain Transportation System and with the Ambler Access Road project, where both of those projects were funded with initial appropriations for ultimately undertaking that work. What is specifically the limitation for ADA is that under our statutes, any bonding that we undertake is subject to the underlying financing plan, the project itself having the ability to repay the bonding that we undertake for it. This is that early stage of being able to undertake the, again, the cultural and environmental work necessary to get to a environmental impact statement review by the federal agency, in this case under NEPA, and ultimately getting to a record of decision that we're able to then do what we're doing as, by example, the Ambler Access Project, be able to, at that stage, invest into that project and bring it to a funding stage for ADA.
Senator Michicki?
So just this project has received $173 million in prior funding since 2008. Was that 8.5 not included in that plan?
The $8.5 million that we're talking about is ultimately looking at the expansion of road development and access development west of the Sioux reaching to the Yetna Mining District. I believe what you're referencing is the earlier allocations that were made for development within the Mat-Su borough getting to the Little Sioux.
Thank you for that. That's very helpful. I appreciate it.
All right. Senator Akil?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I guess, Mr. Weitzner, it sounds like from your description, this is not a shovel-ready project, but it sounds like it's not even an amount that would get you to shovel-ready. Did I understand you to say this amount would only get you to applying for permits ready?
This the amount that's being allocated, again, being very similar to what's been defined for the Long Mountain Transportation System and the Ambler Access Project, is for the field work, wetlands studies, completing those studies, being able to file the application under NEPA, have it be reviewed ultimately by the federal agency for that permit, and then receiving the record decision on ultimately what route is being defined for it. So it's what we undertook on the Ambler Access Project, which did reach a successful record of decision and has led to ultimately the development of that road currently in working with the existing landowners and undergoing at this stage the final feasibility. So it is work that's necessary to ultimately get it to a full access project.
All
So, Mr. Chairman, if I might, just a follow-up maybe to Mr. Steininger. So there had been some discussion, I think, when the package was first rolled out about wanting to have projects that could be built, you know, either right away or within 18 months or so. Can you help us with the thought process that gets us to a pre-permitting process in lieu of a either shovel-ready or within 18 months of shovel-ready project?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, you're right in that quite a bit of this package was directed towards, you know, looking at shovel-ready. In the case of the West Susitna Road project, you know, it's looking at the economic potential of that project and trying to move that forward a little bit further to get it closer to that stage where it can move forward, because there's a lot of economic impact on this project. So that economic, long-term economic impact was sort of another factor that drove in particular this project and its inclusion.
Mr. Chairman, just I guess if we're not left with an asset that the state has, then we don't actually have a capital project the way the Supreme Court has defined it.
Okay. One other question in this regard for question for Mr. Weitzner. What sort of feedback has ADA gotten from residents of the area where the project is going to be built?
Certainly, Mr. Chairman, the feedback that we've received is across the board on public comment. There's concern, obviously, about the access that's being provided. There's concern on the environmental aspects and impacts, ultimately, from the road project itself. There's also been support because of the economic benefits that are coming from it. The partnership that we initiated with the advancement that we took at this stage with the early road to resources program survey that was done initially for the road access is in partnership with the Mat-Su Borough itself. And we have been presenting to the assembly there for each of the phases of how we're looking to progress under it. The benefits ultimately that the Mat-Su Borough is recognizing is, you know, from it, once we get to a construction process, which, again, very similar to the process we're taking with the Ambler Access Project, you're talking about the creation of an estimated 1,000 direct jobs during construction along the access corridor, a greater utilization of the Mat-Su Borough's ownership of the Port McKenzie by enhancing the natural resource exports that would be used by that port from ultimately accessing the Yetna Mining District. Increased access within the Mat-Su Borough to over 65,000 acres of agricultural land and over 6 million acres of recreational opportunities. The thing I would add in this case is that the Mat-Su Borough has defined this to be a public access road as well, so they would benefit from that opening west of the Susitna. The economic benefits as well to the state and the borough ultimately through mine royalties and the lease payments and port fees that are generated once there's full development of the mining activities in the Yetna Mining District and the other resources that are along the route. So that has been the basis of the general discussions with the Mat-Su Borough. And again, in broad context, the stakeholders within the Mat-Su Borough have commented on their concerns, and we've registered that and begin addressing those parts.
Senator Schauer.
Mr. Chairman, I know there's a lot of these to go through, but you opened up this Pandora's box here. But just briefly, because this one is in our district or partially in my district, and it's been a concern for some number of years, there's kind of two camps, and I just went on the record. One of them is kind of the environmental side that's like no development, don't develop anything, leave it, you know, a national park. I mean, a little bit facetious, but there's that kind of side of it. The other side, which I would argue from what I have seen based on feedback and other meetings in the borough, is more of a development, certainly responsible development, but development nonetheless, because the numbers I have seen as the Mat-Su continues to grow and we're looking at, you know, nearly the size of Anchorage in the next 20 to 25 years, this provides massive potential for economic development, jobs, et cetera, done responsibly, of course. But it's amazing numbers to see, because it is the one area, to be quite frank, that we can go to. We don't have a lot of other land right now. Anchorage is limited. So if you're going to go anywhere and you look at this where it's available and has infrastructure to move, it's that western portion going west and southwest. So for what it's worth, Mr. Chairman, I thought it to in addition to what he said, that's all true. But I think you generally find in the MATSU population of 110,000 folks generally very positive towards development because of what it equals. Thank you.
All right. Any other questions on this project? I think we're good. All right. Moving on. Let's see. We got the Houston Middle School replacement. Any questions on that one specifically? All right. I think we're good there. All right. Major maintenance grant fund for school major maintenance. So my initial question on this one is there a particular reason that we are bonding for a grant fund rather than bonding for specific projects?
Yes, Chair Myers, so, and I know we have Heidi Teschner and Lacey Sanders on the line, but I'll just kind of give a little bit of the philosophy of why we put in as school major maintenance fund rather than individual projects off the list. So the school major maintenance fund funds capital projects put forward by districts to the Department of Education, who have a very robust process for ranking and choosing projects on that list and developing that ranking based on a lot of different factors that, if the committee's interested, Ms. Teschner can go into. But the reason that we didn't just pick the first $25 million of projects off that list is because some of those projects, between when that list gets put together and funding's available via either the School Major Maintenance Fund or the REAA Fund or other sources that the district may have access to, that list can change a little bit when it gets to the end of the day when the money is distributed. Also, some of those costs for the projects, when the state pays in, the project may come in under budget. And that additional money, when it's put into the major maintenance fund, can then flow to the next project on the list. So by depositing the money into the major maintenance fund, we know it will be spent on eligible capital projects that are eligible for bonding and meet all the requirements that we have. But it creates that flexibility to allow the Department of Education to move to the next project on the list should there be additional funding remaining, or should other fund sources come in to fund some of those projects. So the idea was not to kind of tie one hand behind the back of the Department of Education in managing this money, kind of in the best interest of those schools.
Senator Machicki?
So on the cut sheet for this, it says that we can view the maintenance initial list on the education website. So we can sort of view that, get some rough idea in the first 25, we know it's going to carry past that, but we are going to continue with the priority order that's currently existing?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, yes. So we think that process that the department has is, you know, it's very robust. It involves a lot of back and forth with those districts. And, you know, there's an integrity to that process and that ranking, and so we didn't want to move off of that list.
Thank you.
All right. Any other questions? Senator Keel.
And I appreciate and support that ranking process, but I think that the seventh project on the list gets you to an aggregate number of 26.2. Why did we choose 25?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, the $25 million number really came from, you know, as I mentioned earlier, a lot of this came from prior capital requests by departments, and just knowing that that list does shift a little bit between appropriation and execution, we picked the last number that the Department of Education had brought forward to us as a request. In prior years, the department's brought forward a $25 million request, and either we've not been able to accommodate it at all or have accommodated a much smaller amount, but so we chose to put forward just the baseline amount that the department has requested every year. So it wasn't based on, you know, hitting a specific project on the list, more what that kind of traditional capitalization request has been in the past.
So I guess, Mr. Chairman, that would then leave the legislature on the hook to find the rest in GF to fill out whatever that last project is.
All righty. Any other questions on this one? All right. Mount Edgecombe High School repairs. Not seeing any particular questions on that one. Oops, excuse me. Electronics Pioneer Home Roof and Flooring Replacement. Fairly straightforward.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator Michiki.
I can't help but asking this. I tried to avoid asking it, but I see Mount Edgecombe High School in a lot of our capital projects through the years, or a lot of our capital project lists through the years. How many students attend Mount Edgecombe High School? Do you know?
Through the chair, Senator Michiki, I think I'd like to ask Lacey Sanders or Heidi Teschner to respond to that question. I don't know the answer.
Ms. Sanders or Ms. Teschner, if either of you could answer the lifeline.
Yes. For the record, this is Heidi Teschner, Director of Finance and Support Services with the Department of Education and Early Development. And through the chair, this school year, we have about 374 students that are attending Mount Edgecombe. They average anywhere between 400 to 425 in a normal school year.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Sanders, can you send me details about Mount Edgecombe? I mean, you can't help but notice that an entire school replacement in Mat-Su is, or Houston, is $9 million. These seem like proportionally much lower value repairs. I don't want to make that judgment call because I don't know, but I'd like to learn as much about that as possible, if you don't mind.
Not at all. And if it's okay with the chair, regarding the Houston Middle School, I'll just share that the $9 million is the additional money that district needs in order to complete their project. So that actually is the $34 million Houston Middle School replacement project is the total value. And I will get you information on Mount Edgecombe.
All right. Thank you. Senator Bishop?
Just to add a little bit more on Mount Edgecombe, I believe the State Department of Education owns Mount Edgecombe. The other thing is the boys' dormitory is a World War II barracks, and there's four men to a room, and that's part of the reason why the cost is probably a little bit more, and plus their room and boarding every one of those students. For the most part, I understand there are some students that might live off campus with a host family, I have heard from time to time, but anyway, those are just my comments.
All right. Anybody else? All right. Got the Fairbanks Pioneer Home Roof and Flooring Replacement. Relatively straightforward there. Fairbanks Youth Facility. Nothing there. Okay. Oops. Excuse me. Palmer. Pioneer Home, Alaska Veterans and Pioneer Home Roof Replacement. Pretty straightforward, okay. Avtec. Nope, no questions, okay. Alaska Public Safety Communication Services System Upgrades. Nope, okay. The Alcantara Armory and Arc Flash Improvements. Okay. Senator Keel.
Mr. Chairman, I wonder if we could get, I looked at the detail sheet here, and it's not a lot of detail on it. Can we get a little more information on what this is? I mean, is this standard maintenance? Is this really a major maintenance project? What? Probably one of the smaller projects on the bond. What are we talking about here?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, I think Stephanie Richards is on the line from Department of Military and Veterans Affairs that can give a bit more detail. This is a request that the department has brought forward a couple of times related to this item and hasn't been able to be accommodated in prior capital budgets, but I think Stephanie can give some good detail on the need here.
Before she does that.
Quickly, Senator Schauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to answer that before Stephanie jumps on board, which, of course, love to hear her comments. That's right down the road from where I live, and we've toured that a number of times. And I can tell you when you walk around the facility, there's ceiling tiles falling down. There's stuff everywhere. It's very out of date. And I give you that example because when you go back to the earthquake and they could not mobilize and get people down there, you know, 2 years ago for that earthquake, that was the Joint Operations Center. That's where everybody went. And it was a nightmare trying to get everything together to make it work. So it is something DMVA has been asking for a number of years. There's a much larger project that is on the hook that is not being funded. This is, and I'll let Stephanie discuss that, but there is a much larger one to create a brand new complex at some point when it is available, if for that very backup reason, as well as the other training things they do, because they've got several companies that do training there, and she can discuss that as well if needed. But I just wanted to highlight that this is something that, having toured the facility and seeing what they needed to do real time, it's an issue. So they do need some help on at least making things work in the meantime, for what it's worth. Thank you.
Stephanie Richard, would you care to add to that comment?
Yes, sir. Thank you. For the record, this is Stephanie Richard, Administrative Services Director for Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. Senator Schauer, thank you very much for those comments and verifying the statement of need on this one. As Senator Schauer mentioned, the Alcantara Armory is used as a secondary command and control center for the department and for the National Guard Joint Operations Center. So that serves as an alternative state emergency operations center as well, if the armory here on Joint Base Elmendorf Richardson was not available for any reason. So this request, although it's a small project, is primarily to help bring the facility up to state, federal, and National Guard Bureau code. A big portion of that is the electronic upgrades and upgrading to some sleeping facilities and some preventative maintenance required. The big piece safety-wise on this one is the arc flash work. There is a requirement that we protect the facilities and its occupants working on electrical systems. So it's really, as Senator Schauer mentioned, to get this facility kind of up to date so that it can serve as a secondary command and control center. And so it's that purpose, as well as specific safety requirements, particularly in terms of electrical and electronic.
Mr. Chairman, just very briefly, I don't question the need for the project. Our armories have to work, our emergency response systems have to work, our people have to be safe. Ordinary maintenance is not a bondable capital improvement. The Attorney General said that in the 90s. So we may have to dig the cash up for this necessary improvement somewhere else.
Well, we will have time for amendments a little later on down the line, so definitely something to think about. Okay. Moving on, next one is the Henny Range shelter replacement outside of Cordova. Any questions there? Okay. Next one, the statewide tower lighting replacement system. Just a quick question: what type of lighting are we talking about here? Are we talking outdoor lighting, indoor lighting? Are we talking large scale?
FCC towers.
FCC. All right. FCC. All right. Any other? All right. I think we're good. All right. Okay. Summit Lake Foundation repairs outside of Hope. Nope. Okay. All right. Next up. A-STAR, the Arctic Strategic Transportation and Resource Project. So, Senator Keel, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This question may start to sound familiar, but I see in the backup that we're looking at surveying, we're looking at assessing, we're looking at doing field work, but I don't see a tangible asset of the state that results at the end. Can somebody fill me in on what the capital improvement is?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, I think we have, might be either Steve Masterman or Jeff Bruno or possibly Sherry Lowenstein with Department of Natural Resources that can talk about the specific activities that are going to be done on this project.
All right.
Yes, good afternoon, everybody. For the record, this is Steve Masterman. I'm director of the Division of Geological and Geophysical Surveys. And as you can see here, there are three areas of work on this project. One is a sand and gravel survey. And so the end product there is an enhanced understanding of the sand and gravel resources across the North Slope, in particular in areas where we have a very poor understanding and sand and gravel resources are hard to find. And these will be, this information will be publicly available information that will be very helpful to the communities and to resource developers for constructing community development projects, community roads or airports, and resource development projects as well. The coastal hazards portion of this is a it's kind of a data collection, as you pointed out, Senator Keel, but it's providing information to help the resiliency of the communities on the coast there. The coast is very fragile. It's very susceptible to erosion, to flooding, and to thermal erosion in particular. So we're working with the communities to provide them information so that they can protect and enhance their communities from storms and flooding and the changing environment. And the petroleum geology field work there, as we are all very aware, the state is quite dependent on petroleum revenues, and so the work that we are doing there is to provide publicly available geological information on the oil and gas resources on state land between the NPRA and ANWR. And there was a question in the text as to why this is a capital project and not part of our operating budget, and quite frankly, our operating budget is quite small and does not have resources allocated in it to cover this kind of expenditure, and hence we have to use other means where possible.
Senator Machicki?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Masterman. In 2017, we appropriated $7.3 million for the kind of initial field work on A-STAR. Some of those the reasons for that funding sound somewhat redundant with what you're asking for here. Is the original work that's complete, was that even more preliminary than this preliminary work? And obviously the legislature voted in support of the A-STAR project as a whole. Did we not fund enough back in 17, or is there additional work that's continuing? It doesn't really seem like a new phase. Am I incorrect there? Are we still, seems largely like it's still phase one?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, that's an excellent question. I'm going to answer part of it, and then I'll probably call in a colleague, Jeff Bruno, to answer part of this as well. So part of the work in phase one was to understand what some of the data gaps were. And so the work that we are doing now is filling the identified data gaps that were, identified, I guess, in the initial phase of the project. And so that's the sand and gravel work, the flooding and erosion work, and the petroleum geology work as well. And so with that, perhaps I'll ask Jeff if he's on the line to address the other part of your question, which was kind of the very first aspect of the A-STAR project as it was initially conceived.
Yeah, this is Jeff Bruno with DNR for the record, Senator Machicki through the chair. This is kind of the next phase. When we started the first phase of A-STAR, it was really about, there was a couple different portions of it. A big portion of that was stakeholder engagement. We actually got out to each community at least twice. We missed a couple due to COVID for our third rounds that we were going out there for. So we did put a lot of money in spending time with the communities and the North Slope Borough to identify, create project libraries that the communities controlled. We also looked at a lot of different tools and produced a lot of different reports and route analysis. And so a portion of that, when we kind of are finishing, or we're kind of focusing, is looking, as Steve was talking about, identifying those data gaps, identifying the projects that we are looking to support. Gravel, obviously, is a big one out in the NPRA. And so really trying to hone in and focus on, even get more focused on filling those data gaps, identifying them, and moving communities closer to these priority projects.
One more follow-up.
Yeah, Senator Chickie.
I appreciate that question. In the cut sheet, it talks about the department facilitating oil and gas leasing, complementary planning efforts, if you will. The $7.3 million wasn't used for that, right? We already have a Department of Natural Resource segment that works on oil and gas leasing. Can you clarify that as well?
Yeah, it's Jeff Bruno again. Yeah, for the oil and gas leasing, we mainly focused, one of the big goals of A-STAR was really to focus on federal lands and helping communities interact and identify on how to push projects through there. The oil and gas leasing part is not as much as part of the A-STAR. Obviously, when we're working in that region, there's going to be overlap for sure. But our main focus for a lot of the projects was federal lands and helping look for ways to do community projects that also benefit industry, oil and gas industry, but with a primary focus on community projects, and which really left us in NPRA and ANWR and focusing on those resources and projects in those areas.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Steve, or what's it, Jeff? Yeah, either one of you that want to take a stab at this. I would like to know, what's the total cost to get this project to final investment decision? You don't have to answer that now, but if you could get back to the chairman with his permission. And the second question I have is, how is the community outreach going along the route with the communities? Are they supportive or not supportive?
Yeah, this is Jeff Bruno, Senator Bishop through the chair. You know, one of the tricky parts of A-STAR is trying not to speak too much for the communities, but ultimately we give them a lot of control of the projects that we identify and allow them to add and subtract projects. And then we've gone through some stakeholder face-to-face ways, and we have a way for them to rate them. In general, we're using all their information. We're really giving them as much control. So ideally, there is support and that these are projects that they've identified and that they've worked with. In general, though, they need a lot of infrastructure in some of these areas. So there is support with them, especially, you know, ones that don't open up access to the public. We see a lot of support for. And so I would say A-STAR has had really good stakeholder engagement, and it's been very well supported, and that's been one of the big successes of this program.
Thank you.
And it's also important to remember, this is a partnership with the North Slope Borough, and so we have a very strong connection with them through this. They also put funds towards it, and so that's just another portion that we have on this project.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. I've got one other question for you, Mr. Bruno. You mentioned a couple of times that you're primarily looking at federal land that you're doing this on, NPRA and others. Less a question, more of a comment, but I'm curious as to your reaction of it. Sounds to me like we're kind of doing the Fed's job a little bit if it's on their land, and I'm just curious how the state interaction is going there.
Yeah, there's a lot of federal coordination on this, and there's even a lot of federal partnership on it also. Ultimately, this, you know, we're looking at extending infrastructure to places that would also have resource development potential. So there's a lot of different benefits to look at when we're kind of going down that road.
Okay. So following up on that, are you saying that the federal government is also kicking in some resources as well on this?
Yes.
Program going down the road?
Yeah, through the chair. Senator, through the chair. Yes. It depends on the program. We have a couple different programs that Steve was going through. We definitely, BLM has put money towards our gravel survey. We've looked at gravel survey kind of in the east region of NPR, kind of near the Colville, and now we're going up towards the communities of Ukiavik a little bit. BLM has put money towards that to help us go with that, as has the borough. So we've been able to extend it a lot of our funds in that manner also. Are we doing their job for them too? I would just say, you know, I don't know if they have, I can't speak to their mission. They seem to want to partner with us more than locate the resources themselves. So this offers them that avenue. And it's been a success teaming with those entities.
Yeah, through the chair, I'd just like to add, this is Steve Masterman again, I'd just like to add to something that Jeff touched on there. And each three of these components have leveraged federal funds to assist us with our efforts. The coastal and hazards portion has leveraged funds from the Denali Commission and through the Alaska ANTHC. We just received a $1.1 million grant from ANTHC, which was partially grounded in the state funding that we got through this project. And then our work on the petroleum geology, we're anticipating a contribution of over $1 million from the USGS for that effort as well. So we're leveraging federal funds on all phases of this where we can, and I think it's pretty good participation across the board.
Questions on this one? Okay. Seeing none, moving forward, the Fairbanks to Seward multi-use recreational trail. Looks like we're doing primarily planning on this one, not into construction yet. Questions? Okay. Quick question on this one. I believe this goes back to DNR. If we're working on planning now, roughly when are we looking at a completion? For starters,
Chair Myers, we do have Ricky Geese, the Parks Director, who might be able to answer this question. The Fairbanks to Seward multi-use recreational trail actually is for construction activities for the trail, not just planning.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm not sure if there may be the poorly worded portion in the write-up you're looking at, possibly. There is, you know, construction activity of, you know, things like trail connections to campgrounds, restroom construction, signage, things of that nature. And I think Director Geese might be able to speak a little bit more to that.
Okay. Mr. Geese?
Yes, for the record, my name is Ricky Geese, Director of Division of Parks and Outdoor Recreation and DNR. Through the chair, Senator, I didn't catch who asked the question, but I can fill in more details. This is the list on here. These are all worthy projects. There's most of it is construction that's outlined on this list currently. There's reroutes on Chugach State Park. There's a visitor center component in Mat-Su Convention and Visitor Bureau, Denali State Park cut system for trails, Curry Ridge Trail to Kasugi Ridge, and the Equinox Marathon travel completion. So this is primarily focused on trail work. I do know that also Alaska Trails has been putting fourth additional effort on that and may have some additional information on the actual long trail itself, where we are nearing completion for the overall whole project. This is components of that project.
All right. Senator Machicki.
I hate to be that guy, but I just got to say we've got critical highway integrity projects. We have crumbling schools, and we have said no on a couple of these projects a couple of times so far. So we're talking about projects in this meeting, right? And not really the finances, but even though bond money is at a historic low and it may or may not be offsetting other capital projects, how do we prioritize this particular project when we think about the other needs around the state? And that could be one for Director Geese. Director Geese knows me very well and knows I love trails. But there's some items on here that are not exactly trails. So how do we prioritize our spending? And is this series of projects one that really rose to the top when we think about key priorities around the state today?
For the record, Director Geese here, through the chair, Senator Machecki. So there's two ways to look at this. These are a list of projects that were identified as priorities in the spring 2020 document for Alaska Trails. They have done further work on it and refined a list of things that could be also explored at a future date. The concept for the Long Trail is to have a signature trail in Alaska, much like the Appalachia Trail or the Pacific Crest Trail. The Seward to Fairbanks component of it then would not just be for a localized area, but add a quiver into the independent travel market. This past year in COVID, we've seen a record number of Alaskans going out and recreating. And we've also seen a continuing share of independent travelers coming. We have seen the cruise ship market, you know, being at a standstill. So in terms of kind of having a signature component for that independent travel market and for Alaska residents, this would be that project. It would be one of the highest priority projects for the outdoor recreation industry in terms of moving forward. So that's how the concept is prioritized. The individual components, I think, could still be considered a work in progress, and we can definitely come up with the background materials of a variety of different trail projects. If we just want to focus on trail projects, there's a surplus of funding for components of this trail, but this chunk of funding would get that a lot closer to completion than where we are currently.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Machecki.
Thank you for that, Director Geese. Could you please provide the chair with kind of a comprehensive plan for, I'm philosophically supportive of the Fairbanks to Seward trail system. I'd like to understand how these individual projects move us to that point. It would seem like the trail would be first and then really nice components would be second. But if you can send that to the chair, it'd be nice to understand your vision here and how these individual projects were selected toward that vision.
For the record, Director Geese here, through the chair, Senator Machecki, we will do that. And I do know, I believe that Alaska Trails also has been working with Director Steninger exactly on that component and are preparing materials to share with the legislators.
Thank you.
All right. Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Geese, what's the operation and maintenance cost of these trails after they're completed? Annually.
So that, for the record, Director Geese, Senator Bishop through the chair, that depends a lot on how well the trails are constructed in the first place. So we make a focus on trying to design these trails to sustainable design standards for the type of trail that they are. Typically trails, and also depending on where they are, will have a fairly lengthy lifespan, 10, 20, 30 years, depending where you are. Different parts of the state have different trails going through different environments. So if we're going through a rainforest in Tuchmek Bay where we have longer growing seasons, the refresh rate for trail clearing has become much faster and higher maintenance costs. If we're going over an alpine tundra zone on the Kusigi Ridge,
once we build that to the sustainable design standards, that should last longer and not have as much maintenance costs. And so we try to, when these trails are being constructed, try to anticipate, crossings, slope, all that type of stuff goes into the design of it. And we really do try to build these to last, because it's a lot cheaper to build them to last than to come back out and keep repairing something that didn't take something into account properly.
Senator Bishop.
Thank you for that, but you're still going to have an operation and maintenance cost. And we're fine with just, give us a number. You don't have to give it to us here, but when you get the finance, we're going to want to know a number, what's your operation and maintenance cost, because it's going to be reoccurring in your general fund, in your base budget going forward.
For the record, Director Geese, through the chair, Senator Bishop, correct. Not all of it, we should be clear on this. The Division of Parks and Outdoor Recreation, this long trail, although it goes through components of our parks, like Chugach State Park and Denali State Park, this whole trail is not exclusively in Alaska State Parks. So there are going to be other components that will have maintenance and operations components to it, but we can provide those for the parks that we do have, and that would be a component. We'll have that figure for you in finance then.
Thank you.
All righty. Any more on this one? I think we're good for now. All right. Moving on. Next one is the statewide fire break construction program. Just a comment of my own. Maybe Mr. Steiniger or maybe DNR's got some more on this one, but there's not much information given here, and it'd be nice to know a little bit more of where they're planning on putting in some of these fire breaks, and if there's something in particular that they're trying to address. It's a large state; we're not putting in fire breaks everywhere, but a little bit more information would be nice.
Yes, Senator Myers, I think, Norm McDonald with Fire Suppression is on the line. And you're right, that write-up does not give you specific locations. I think that priority is really something that that McDonald could speak to in terms of where they see the highest need in the state.
Mr. McDonald?
Hi, good afternoon. For the record, this is Norm McDonald. I'm the Chief of Fire and Aviation for the Alaska Division of Forestry. And I'm sorry, was it the chair who had asked the question?
That was myself, the chair.
Okay, good. Well, through the chair then. You're right. There's not a lot of information on this write-up. We do have, so what we've, in the past, these projects have been in production since the late 1990s up until this year, and it's all been federally funded projects. Those have been done through a variety of different programs. The most widely used is called the WUI, the Wildland-Urban Interface. So these focus on our problem areas in that wildland-urban interface setting. So the majority of our projects are in our larger communities and along the highway system, but we also have projects ongoing and planned for in the villages, some of the out western Alaska, where we have the high danger fuel types. So the projects we have, part of this funding would cover the maintenance of existing fuel breaks. The federally funded projects do not, or those grants do not cover the maintenance component of this. And these projects require upkeep of some sort, every 10 to 20 to 30 years, depending on the fuel type. An example of that is the Murphy Dome fuels break up in Fairbanks. It was used on the Shovel Creek fire and protected just about $300 million worth of homes. That was put in over a series of years dating back to early 2000, completed in about 2010. And that's in need of maintenance of this year. So that's one example of how this would be done. We have about $9.3 million of unfunded fuel breaks on the books. We have a document we can share where those are located and what type of fuel breaks those would be. And additionally, this will be an ongoing project for continued strategic planning. That means we work closely with the communities. It's a program called Community Wildfire Protection Plans. where the Division of Forestry and other protection agencies work with those local governments, identifying hazard areas or the hazard fuel areas, work on that homeowner defensible space component, evacuation routes. So that's all tied into this this fuels project.
Senator Schauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not, I don't know that we need to go there based on time, but I want to throw this out because I said it in finance 2 years ago. I know that at least in the Matsu, our district, there's a lot of interest in firewood and allowing citizens to both, you know, either cut down areas to help with the effort or to certainly take it away. There was also talk about selling it to certain Asian markets. So we can certainly talk offline, but I'm more interested, again, with the lack of data on this one. Are those things included as a part of this, irrespective of the comments about, you know, how this can be spent and whether it's infrastructure, et cetera? But I know that there was great interest, at least in some of the more local areas, to be able to do that in the plan. And I, like I said, I'm happy to take that offline for time. Thank you.
Okay, through the chair, Senator Schauer, yeah, we realize that that has been brought forward to us. I know the local areas are working and do have open firewood sales in this fuel types. Some of these projects are large scope. They're going to take contracts with local contractors and heavy equipment to produce the type of work we're looking for, but there is ongoing efforts to make that available to local, you know, firewood gatherers for that type of resource as well.
Got a request here. We'd like to see if you have a priority list for your fire breaks and see what you're working on there, either Mr. Steiniger or Mr. McDonald. So I realize you may not have that now, but for next time we meet, perhaps somewhere down the line.
That's something we can produce.
Okay. All right. Any more on this one? Nope. Okay. Next up, the statewide park sanitation and facility upgrades. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to ask two questions, and you should laugh at the inconsistency between them because they're intellectually wildly inconsistent. First one is... usually people wait till I ask the question before they laugh at me. Now, the first one, through the chair, Mr. Steininger, it's I think State Parks has a deferred maintenance list, a major maintenance list, well over $20 million. So this is two. How did we set the cut point here?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, the point here and the number here, as I had said earlier, a lot of these came populated from prior capital project requests that couldn't be accommodated in prior years. So this amount of money came from a request that the department put forward for, you know, not hitting their entire list of maintenance or and really renewal and replacement, but just hitting their highest priority items.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, I mean, it's I think Director Geese gave a really excellent answer to an earlier question about the economic value of independent travelers, as well as the value to Alaskans. So it's a shame to see it this small. Now just to flip 180 degrees and go at this from exactly the opposite direction, there are Attorney General's opinions that say maintenance, ordinary maintenance, doesn't count as a capital improvement for purposes of the Constitution's requirement on bonding. And I'm looking at some of these, and we're talking about insulating a pump house. We're talking about replacing bunks. How do we get these little projects, much as I love them, I love parks as much as the Senate President loves trails, how do we get these to the status of capital improvement under the Constitution?
So through the chair, Senator Keel, that's a really good question. There's, when we talk about maintenance on state facilities, often we use that word when we're really talking about replacement or upgrade of some types of facilities, which really isn't necessarily operating maintenance. You know, when we spend money on operating maintenance or, you know, annual operation and maintenance or even deferred maintenance, you know, the strictest definition of that is really just to bring it to the working condition it started in. A lot of these things aren't really fitting that definition. They're going beyond just, you know, patching a roof or just, you know, cleaning up an item or bringing it to working order. They're replacing with new and replacing with more functional or more attractive facilities in parks, or things that are beyond what was sitting there before. So there is a, the nomenclature we use when we talk about it as maintenance, sometimes we lump into that maintenance term things that really are more of a capital improvement and not just operating maintenance. There is a gray area there. And that when you look at, for example, deferred maintenance appropriations to the state, we don't leave that definition at deferred maintenance. It's deferred maintenance, replacement, and renewal, because we know that there is, there's a boundary there in that very strict, kind of pedantic definitional way of looking at it. But, we have, we sent this list to our Department of Law for review prior to release. We do know that, as you've highlighted, some of these things kind of fit into that gray area, but we do believe that these, fit the definitions that would be allowable for bonding.
Mr. Chairman, I wonder if the OMB director would be willing to share some of the department law's opinions on some of those things, or the review of the projects. That would be very, very helpful.
I'll discuss that with Department of Law. I want to commit them to anything that they,
Thank you, Mr. Steiniger. Okay, seeing no other questions on this, and moving on to one my kids would understand. We're buying a new fire truck. Wildland Fire Engine Replacement. Senator Keel.
I hate to do it, Mr. Chairman. So 1979, the Attorney General opined that trucks aren't capital improvements for the purpose of the Constitution's limit on bonding. 1979. How do we get this one over the hump?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, I think I'll have to get back to you and discuss with Department of Law.
Thank you.
All right.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Machicki.
I think Senator Keel brings up some good points that are worthy of discussion, and I think we do understand Senator Keel's point, so I'm hoping we could get an answer but still get through the list. And I don't mean any disrespect to Senator Keel, but I think we get it. It'd be nice to have those answers so that we can understand if we're moving forward appropriately.
Well, we obviously, based on time, we will be coming back to this, and it's going to be next week, the next time we discuss this bill, so it does give Department of Law a little bit of a chance to respond to some of the issues brought up today about how legal some of this is. So, all righty. Moving on, the next one, wildland firefighting aircraft replacement. Senator Keel, I'm assuming we'll have the same objection, so no offense, but we will pass on and move forward. All right, Senator Schauer.
I do not have the same question that Senator Keel has, just for the record. However, I do want to put it on the record, this is an area that I'm a little more familiar with when we're talking about flying metal objects around the sky. And I would like to take this discussion offline with whoever the appropriate one would be, just to continue with the office. So I would like to go into a little more fidelity, because I don't agree with the assessment that the Shrike is the right aircraft for this based on the requirements they're stating they need. I would see that as a Caravan. While it is slower, it has the other capacities they need, and cost might be an issue if that is solved recently within that. But if I could get whoever the appropriate one is to talk to my office, I would like to talk about the proposal here and which the appropriate aircraft might be. I agree they need it. It is the right thing for the state, for what we do with the size and scope of firefighting efforts. But this is one where you kind of get into the anyways, you get what I'm saying on this one. But I'm a little concerned on this one that we may be trying to go cheap, and you cry once or cry often. So I'd like to discuss that with whoever could get with me after. Thank you.
Yes, through the chair, Senator Schauer. I think I will have Norm MacDonald and Sherry Lowenstein contact you. I think those would be two of the appropriate people to talk to about that issue.
Thank you.
All righty. Moving on, then, the Alaska Wildlife Troopers Marine Enforcement Repair and Replacement. Senator Bishop. Never mind. All right. Seeing no questions. Moving on to the next one, also from the Department of Public Safety, boating upgrades, haul outs, and vessel replacement. Senator Keel.
Mr. Chairman, could we just ask for a little more detail on this? We see two medium-class vessels. Are they blue shirt, brown shirt? Where do they go? Used vessels, new vessels, maintenance plan? What are they for?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, I don't know if I know the answer to the blue shirt versus brown shirt. I don't believe we actually have anyone from Department of Public Safety on the line right now, but I can get you an answer on that. They're marine vessels that were decommissioned very recently and need to be replaced. So I believe that would make them brown shirt trooper related, but I don't know exactly, so I'll get back to you.
Thanks.
Okay. All right, moving on. Oh, for the Transportation Committee, we're actually going to start on the transportation projects. All right, so Airport Way West improvements in Fairbanks. Okay, no questions. All right, moving on. Whittier Tunnel. All righty. No questions.
A brief question, Mr. Chair.
Senator Chower, sorry.
As this one is kind of in my district, I would like just if we get a little more fidelity on exactly what's going to take place, kind of the same comment on it. So not much there, a little thin. So if we could get that to either the committee or myself, I'd appreciate it.
Through the chair, Senator Chower, certainly I can have them put together a little more information on what's actually happening in the tunnel.
Thank you.
Yes.
Senator Machicki?
I have a 3 o'clock that I can't avoid. I just wanted to make one quick little statement. You're going to see me supportive of public safety, transportation, communication, school projects that need to be done. A little bit more resistant on some of the other peripheral projects. But I'm open to learning about it at the next meeting, and we have some questions that I look forward to getting answered.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
All righty. Let's see. All right. Next up, let's see. We got, after the Whittier Tunnel, we got the Bethel Airport. There's a lot of airport projects in here. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Steininger, this looks from the description like things that would be AIP eligible. And the feds, I think, do that at 93% to 7 local or 7 non-federal. Is there a reason we propose 100% bond for this and not make this an AIP project?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, there could be, there are projects for these airports that are AIP eligible. There are, other projects that may not be. And I think, I believe we have Deputy Commissioner Bender who oversees statewide aviation with Department of Transportation. Who has a lot more detail on specific projects that will be funded at these airports and whether or not they're ones that similar to the highway projects where we've proposed bonding for the match, if it could be done the same way for some of those specific projects, because there could be some areas where we could add additional federal receipts here and show that matching capability and similarly treat these airport projects as we do the highways, if that makes sense.
Mr. Chairman, I think I got lost. You're not saying that if you could get this on an AIP list, you'd reallocate geobond money, are you?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, what I'm saying is if there are some of these projects that could be done through the AIP, so the way that we handled the federal highways, the STIP projects later on this list, was to bond for the state match portion. If there's any projects within these airports that it turns out are AIP eligible, that might be a better way to go because it would allow for that reduction in the state need there. When we were building out this list and looking at airports in need, we were really looking at distribution of funding to different airports around the state, kind of looking at that philosophy of where things may be quickly deployed as well as geographic distribution. And so that really guided a lot of the selection of these airports here. But Deputy Commissioner Bender can speak to the specific projects and may be able to help identify ones that are AIP eligible.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That'd be great.
Okay. Well, the issue we're running up against is time here. My suggestion with the airport projects is we hold some of these over until our next meeting, and then that way Mr. Bender will have the opportunity to give us quite a bit more detail here. As we're running out of time, Senator Schauer, did you have a quick comment?
It did.
Question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just the same comment on some of these. I mean, I can see the top line description, but I would like a little more fidelity, probably anywhere where we have a blank spot. And, you know, for example, just very briefly, like on the airport when it says lighting, et cetera, well, I know that, for example, there are certain airports where we get a lot of vandalism and we're replacing the lights over and over and over again. I'd kind of like to know about that, what we're doing with some of the data, because you start to think that, well, if we're not, there's another issue. Why are we going to keep paying for things? And if their local community can't police it, et cetera, types of issues that might flow together. So I ask only that we could get more fidelity on the specific projects as opposed to the more generic ones on anything where you have a blank sheet. Would be helpful, Mr. Chairman, as well. That's just generic comment for the whole thing. Thank you.
Certainly.
All righty. Well, given that we've already lost two of our members, I know we're going to have to lose a third here shortly. We are at a seem to be at a decent stopping point for now. We'll be able to revisit this topic, as I said, hopefully next week. We haven't finalized that yet, but we will shortly. So I believe that concludes our meeting for today. Our next meeting is going to be this Thursday, March 4th. We're going to be hearing from the Department of Administration, talking about some of their DMV closures and transitions. And then we're going to be doing a couple of confirmations for the Board of Marine Pilots. Unless anybody else has any closing comments, I think we're good for now. Thank you, Mr. Scheininger, for your time. Thank you, everybody online, even those of you who didn't get a chance to speak. Hopefully we'll be hearing from some of you next time around. With that, we are going to be adjourned at 2:59 p.m.